Hey there. We at Blue Wire just wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this podcast. We know everything outside is pretty scary and uncertain, but we're committed to helping you get through your day by talking about the sports and teams that you love most. If you're looking for more great podcasts to distract you, check out BlueWirePods.com. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the podcast and stay safe.
Blue Wire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with a runway, lays it in. Zach LaVine does it again.
A late shot on the rim.
The finisher, Lauri Markkanen.
The crossover, LaVine.
Get up or get out the way, Trae Young.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast on the Blue Wire Network. We're brought to you by BetOnline.ag. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm here, as always, with Jason Pat. Jason, the Bulls have a GM, Mark Eversley, who they hired away from the Philadelphia 76ers. So that's something we're going to talk a little bit more about in a later episode. But Jason, I'm sure you are a Mark Eversley expert already. Give me your hottest take on Mark Eversley as the new Bulls general manager.
I literally tweeted last night, I have like zero take on Mark Eversley. I know he is from the Brian Colangelo tree. I don't know, that might freak you out. I did a quick news piece about him for Bloggable last night, and the only picture I found in like the dashboard was with Andrea Bargnani. Also freaked me out. But no, honestly, like he's got background with Nike, the Raptors, Colangelo. Again, he went to the Wizards. He went to the Sixers in 2016. 2018 got promoted. Again, Colangelo guy. I'm not sure. I asked around a little bit. Not really sure how much, like what kind of stuff he's done. His exact role is with the Sixers. I still need to do my reading on him. So I obviously right now not totally prepared to really talk about Mark Eversley, other than he's the first African American GM in Bulls history. So that was the thing that was noted right away. They said that they were going to hire and have a diverse staff. So that's at least a good sign. He seems to be a guy that with like good player relationships from the Nike stuff and the marketing, that kind of stuff. Obviously the Bulls, that's good for the Bulls. Besides that, I need to do more reading on him. So, I mean, he seems fine. It's hard to have like a hot take about a GM you really don't know that much about, like coming up the ranks of with all these different teams.
All right, but we have a guest with us as well today, and that's Lazarus Jackson, editor for Detroit Bad Boys, the great SB Nation Pistons site. He's also the host of a Blue Wire podcast on the Pistons called Pistons versus Everyone. Lazarus, what's going on, man? What else did I forget? I know you have so many projects you're involved with covering the Pistons.
I've also got the Detroit Bad Boys podcast that I host, but that's basically everything, right? Like
just that.
Know, just that.
Plenty.
So, Lazarus, like us, you also cover a very bad basketball team, a team that hasn't been good in quite a while. And like us, your favorite team had a big part to do with The Last Dance last night. We got to see episodes 3 and 4 from the ESPN 10-part docuseries. And this thing's been juggling multiple timelines the entire time. There's been sort of the ongoing trial and tribulations of the 98 Bulls that were dubbed The Last Dance. There's been kind of the rise of the Bulls from the very beginning. And in this episode, we saw their battles with the Pistons in the late 80s and in 1990 and in 1991 as well. And then there's also been sort of like personal profiles of a key figure from the dynasty. In this past episode, we got Rodman, who of course has Pistons ties, and Phil Jackson. So Lazarus, I guess I'll start off by saying, what did you think of last night's episodes? How did you think the Pistons were portrayed? And, you know, how are you feeling this morning after taking it all in last night?
I think the Pistons were portrayed as I expected them to be in a 10-part documentary series about Michael Jordan, right?
Yeah.
Like this is not the story of the Detroit Bad Boys. ESPN has a great 30 for 30 on the Bad Boys. And if you are interested in what the Pistons look like in their own minds, like you can watch that. But this isn't that, right? In this narrative, the Bad Boys are an obstacle to be overcome, more so than like a story in their own right. And so ultimately, like it's about what I expected. I think the revelation that, you know, 30 years later, Isaiah and Michael are like still pissed off at each other about the handshake that wasn't, that's interesting, but also like not surprising when you consider the competitive nature of both of those guys. And so I think that was what a lot of the discussion was about last night and into the morning. But like, that's purely logical, right? Like, it makes a lot of sense that both those guys harbor a lot of resentment towards one another because of what the documentary like established that occurred in their careers, you know?
Yeah, obviously the bad blood there. And as Bulls fans, obviously, like we have our own biases. Pistons fans have their own. And like, it was, to me, it was a great watching Michael Jordan and like the Horace Grant, like just straight up bitches that move. And like, I think even Bill Cartwright sounded mad about it. It's like clearly the bad blood still there after all these years. And you mentioned the walkout. That was a huge thing. Isaiah Thomas like went on ESPN today, I think, like apologized for the perception there. Bill Laimbeer was talking shit back to Jordan. So I kind of love all this pettiness. But one of the things that I think I saw you retweeting some stuff, and I read some stuff from like Vinny Goodwill. I can't remember the other article that I read, but kind of the stuff they did not show. Because you kind of said like what we saw is what you expect from a Michael Jordan basically produced doc. Like, it's going to make Jordan and the Bulls look a bit better. It'll paint the Pistons as the villain. One of the key things that they did not show apparently was Michael Jordan basically just shit talking like the day before that game four sweep. And I think he called them like, what was it? Undeserving champs, and he said they were like bad for the league. That was something Laimbeer brought up today on The Jump, was like you know, like they called them a bunch of whiners because they've been crying for a year and a half. I guess from the Pistons perspective, like, was there anything else you think that just kind of played into it? Was they also brought up the Celtics thing, and the Celtics didn't shake their hand. Like, I guess you kind of said it went how it expected. Was there anything else there, like you thought that maybe they should have shown anything else like that?
I think the Celtics thing, where in 88 the Celtics walked off, or, you know, most of the Celtics left. I retweeted something this morning that said, like, you know, an assistant coach was like, hey, there was a security issue where they had to get the guys off the floor. Like, okay, sure. But the Celtics thing, I think it's underplayed, partially because, you know, they are in the same way that like the Bulls are a dynasty, like the Celtics and Lakers like make the 80s. And so to have that in the late 80s kind of act as like an endpoint for their run doesn't get the play of the heights of like, you know, 86 with Walton and everything like that. And so I think that it makes like that needs to be more emphasized from the Pistons perspective, from Laimbeer's perspective, from Isaiah's perspective, right? Like, this is just what happened to them, right? Nothing special about Jordan. Like, they didn't like him, but like this was personal, but it wasn't like they didn't have like a vendetta against him. It was just like, we, you know, like Rodman said, like, you know, thanks for kicking our ass. See you guys later.
Yeah. I guess going into that, just kind of the whole Jordan rules thing, that was also something that they showed a lot. I was just about to pull those up right now. It's basically just how they played them. And there was obviously the things about them being dirty. And I guess just the general perception is another big part of this. The general perception of the Pistons as being dirty, how they implemented those Jordan rules. Do you think that's unfair? Because I think that kind of played into it. Like, obviously they were played up as being just like this dirty bunch of whatever thugs and that whole type of thing. Obviously not the best. Do you think that kind of label on them? I know they had the whole bad boys thing. Do you think that label of them as dirty is unfair? And like, this is the style of play also, was kind of watching that was kind of crazy. And some of those fouls, again, they really played that up. Do you think that was fair? Do you think that kind of got to them? Do you think that annoyed them at all? Or do you think they're just like, whatever, like we're going to embrace this. And we don't really care.
I don't think the perception of them as like a very physical, like dirty team is one that's inaccurate. But what I think is really frustrating for the guys is that that completely overshadows the talent that was a part of that team, right? Like, Isaiah is the best under 6 foot player in the NBA ever, like maybe, right? Like, number two overall pick, put up seasons of like 25 and 10, you know, at his heyday. Laimbeer, one of the few stretch bigs before stretch bigs were a thing, who was also like an effective defender. You know, part of that is because of the physicality, but like, you know, that wasn't a very common thing back in that day. You know, a guy like Vinny Johnson, right, who just came off the bench and instant offense in that role, and that. You know, I don't think I'm trying to recall if he ever won like Sixth Man of the Year, but like that's not a guy who gets brought up a lot in terms of like being a very key piece on a title, on a back-to-back title team outside of Detroit, right? Like Joe Dumars is, I think, more known for his work as a general manager building up the 03-04 Pistons instead of like his play on the court as part of like as like the on-ball guy who was doing a lot of the work defending Jordan. And so I think that the perception that this wasn't like a skilled team, they just like beat the crap out of you and beat you like 88-80 because they didn't let you score. Like, I think that that outstrips the talent and, you know, and the coaching that they actually had.
These, to be honest, like, go ahead. Sorry, Ricky, go ahead.
I was just going to say these Pistons teams were like deep as hell, too. Deeper than I realized. Adrian Dantley was a great player in the league for a long time. Mark Aguirre was on the, I think, 89 team. So It's not just that they were talented, but man, like they had maybe 7, 8, 9 guys that could beat you. Rick Mahorn, John Sally, James Edwards. These were all like very solid NBA players. And the Pistons swept the Lakers, right? For their first title, I believe, in 89.
And they beat the Blazers.
Yeah, they beat the Blazers in 91, yeah. I think Magic didn't play that full finals, though. And so, like, that's always kind of the asterisk on that one. The one that really hurts is the one in 88, where, you know, Isaiah hurts his ankle in game 6, like, grits his way through it, 25 third quarter points. They end up winning that game. And then, you know, they make it to a game 7, but his ankle's the size of a grapefruit, and there's no way they can beat Magic.
Yeah, that honestly, like watching some of that was like I have cursory knowledge of whatever this Bad Boy stuff. Like I feel like I said, in terms of like they're obviously portrayed as the villain or all that, I kind of gained a bit more of appreciation, I think, for them. Just, I mean, and again, you kind of mentioned how they were a thing to for the Bulls to overcome, but I mean, clearly, I mean they were rent free in Jordan's head basically, in the Bulls' head, and they really clearly did push them, and you have to be a damn good team, like. You can be a team just whatever with your physical play, but obviously they had to be really damn good, and they beat the Bulls' ass 3 years in a row. And clearly the Bulls really needed that to get better, for Michael Jordan to get better. I know they showed the whole thing about how he finally started to lift weights, and I know Isaiah Thomas threw a little jab at that this morning on ESPN. But I mean, they clearly needed it. They clearly needed that push, and I mean, more power to them, because I mean, who knows if the Bulls probably would have gotten to won their championships at some point anyways, but they needed. Especially back in the day when, like, you kind of took those levels to your success. Like, the Bulls needed to get over that Pistons thing. They were in their way. The Pistons were a damn good team. And, like, whatever. I've always been taught to whatever. Hate Isaiah Thomas, hate Bill Laimbeer and the Bad Boys. But they were damn good. Like you said, they were more than just tough guys. They were really skilled. So I think, as well as a Michael Jordan documentary could do, I gained a little bit more appreciation for the Pistons, I think.
Yeah, I think one thing the doc did do a good job of was explaining like what the difference was in the 91 series, and it was Scottie Pippen, right? Like Scottie Pippen coming into his own, which was what made a big difference like in that series, so vast a difference in that series. You know, additionally, like there's the Isaiah Thomas injury. He hurt his wrist, I think, in 91, and he had like one of his worst regular seasons. And so, but at the same time, like that's not, from a Bulls perspective, from a Jordan perspective, like that's not the story. The story is like Scottie finally coming into his own. They showed the hard foul that I think Mahorn delivered, and then like him not reacting to it. And, you know, everybody kind of commenting like, oh, like that's when we knew when we had them, when, you know, they were trying to break us mentally and we showed that we wouldn't break mentally. And it's like, okay, well, yes, absolutely. That is a turning point in that series.
Absolutely. And I don't know if I ever actually knew about the whole migraine story, because that was, I think that was 90, right? I think it was game 7, 1990. Pippen had the migraine and he was terrible.
Yeah.
Jordan's response was kind of funny. And I don't know if Jordan totally believes it. I feel like part of me thinks that he thinks Scottie was milking it. But obviously Pippen was brutal in that series. And like you said, he took it upon himself, or in that last game, and he took it upon himself to come back, takes that huge step forward, and the Bulls end up getting past the Pistons. I know the Pistons were also getting older. They were a little kind of on the end of their run there. But yeah, I mean, that whole thing with Pippen, he was obviously a huge part of that. Obviously, we'll talk about Rodman in a bit as well. Before we do that, let's do a quick word from our sponsors. Ricky, take it away.
With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner, BetOnline, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on. From their online casino to poker and blackjack, they're bringing Vegas straight to you. Are you missing the NFL? No problem. BetOnline has live daily Madden 20 simulations you can bet on. You can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. It's open 24 hours a day. It's all online. Go to betonline.ag. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE to join today and receive your welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online wagering solution.
Guys, looking to last longer and go a few extra rounds? Get to BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com is the first ever chewable that brings your performance in the bedroom to a whole nother level. You've got the same active ingredients that are in Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. Since they're chewable, they work faster. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. Plus, you don't need to go to the doctor's office or spend time waiting in the pharmacy line. BlueChew's online physician is free of cost, and once approved, your order ships straight to your door in discreet packaging. Here's a great deal for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order when you use promo code BLUEWIRE. And just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com with promo code BLUEWIRE.
And we are back after that. We should talk about Rodman, because Rodman's obviously a central character in both the Bulls and the Pistons story arc. I guess, Lazarus, from your perspective, do you think that too many people forget about Rodman's heyday in Detroit? Maybe this is my Chicago bias here, but to me, his Detroit days kind of get underplayed a bit, and that was really where he started his rise, started to make a name for himself. And before you answer that, I just want to say that I think Rodman has an absolutely incredible story. It wasn't fully captured in The Last Dance, but there's an amazing Rodman 30 for 30 as well that you can find on the ESPN app. That's really awesome. So just curious to your thoughts on Rodman, Lazarus, and how you think that, you know, his Pistons tenure sort of measures up to his Bulls tenure.
I think he was more vital to those Bulls teams, which is why his, like, the outsized importance on his career is placed on those years.
That makes sense.
I think that, you know, he was definitely like the player he's always been, like a very effective on-ball defender, an insane rebounder. But at the same time, like, the Pistons had other guys who did that, right? Like, they had Laimbeer, they had Mahorn, they had James Edwards. None of those guys like had the energy Rodman did, but like Laimbeer was more skilled as a better shooter, right? They were also like more veteran experience. By the time he made his way to Chicago, because like he had his own like trials and tribulations from Detroit to San Antonio to Chicago, he was definitely like the third most important player on those Bulls teams, and he was also playing a outsized role, and one that wasn't like duplicated elsewhere across the roster, right? Like, he was playing power forward, but like I can't name the Bulls center that he was like playing alongside off the top of my head, right? Because like that's not as vital to the narrative as like what Rodman
Luke brought. Longley, baby.
Put some respect on Luke Longley's name, man.
So I was like, it's not Cartwright. It's not Winnington. Like, I know, like, we're way too late in the 90s for that. But yeah, your boy Luke Longley, he's got it.
Winnington was there, I think, for the last three. I think it was the backup center behind Longley. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
They had like, they had Winnington. They had like Brian Williams, RIP. They picked up John Sally for the 96 run. They had James Edwards for 96 as well. They had like six centers on the roster in 96. Luke Longley was the starting center.
I love that bit of Rodman context, though, because you're totally right that he was the third most important player on those Bulls teams. Obviously, I never knew where he really stacked up on those Pistons teams. And it looks like he did start every game. But you're right that Detroit had a really deep front court even beyond him.
Yeah. And, you know, even, you know, Rodman was counted on, you know, somewhat more offensively for those Bulls teams. Meanwhile, like, you know, the Pistons have, you know, Isaiah and Jody in the backcourt, handling everything. It just wasn't his role. He was, and, you know, they kind of said this in the documentary, right? Like, he was still kind of figuring out what his role was going to be in the NBA and like how he was going to make it his first year in Detroit. And then like the guy showed him and he just decided to like leverage his energy and athleticism in like a really destructive defensively way, like not personally self-destructive. That's not what I meant. We could get to that though.
Yeah. I love the quote from Gary Payton. He called him, what is it? He's the fuck up person because he fucks everything up. I thought that was one of like the best lines of the episode of that. I think that was episode 3. Yeah. And I think what you may have been referring to was they showed some stuff about how he like learned about like just the, and the, about just the rebounding and like the rebounding techniques and like the angles and like the tipping of the ball and like how he learned how to do that. Just like, and then obviously, because he obviously wasn't the biggest guy, not the biggest or strongest guy. I think he was what, 6'6", 6'7". But the dude ended up in his second year, he was already averaging 9 rebounds a game. He wasn't a full time. Basically, when he became a full time starter for the Pistons, he in 91-92, he had 19 rebounds a game. That's, I think, the most in like a really long time. He had a couple seasons with 18 rebounds a game with the Pistons before he went up to the Spurs. Just the way he mastered the rebounding stuff, and like they kind of showed some of that. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, it's always great to get like some actual basketball in like somehow locked into these documentaries about like the overarching narrative behind the stuff. Having the picture or the clip of like him in front of the old school TV, like breaking down film, that was kind of funny to think about. Like that's how they did it back in the day. Or you had even like the diagram of Phil, like explaining the triangle at an extremely high, like 30,000 foot view. Like that stuff was like really cool and something I wish they included more in the documentary.
For sure. I'm looking at Rodman's stats now. Rodman did not lead the league in rebounding until his last year on Detroit when he was 30. So Rodman was great from like 30 until 90. So I guess from 92 to 98, from age 30 to 36. So it's incredible to think about how much energy he played with. And he was a guy who was a 25-year-old rookie. Like that wouldn't even happen anymore unless it was like a draft and stash European guy. But right. To be that high energy, that active, and still be rebounding at that level in your mid to late 30s is just really wild. And that's one thing that struck me throughout this documentary and, you know, throughout just reading about the 90s Bulls and the dynasty years is just how old most of the league's best players were back then. Like even when you think about who the Bulls faced on their title runs, it was mostly a bunch of dudes in their mid 30s. Which just seems so strange now. Obviously, LeBron's there, but you know, majority of the league is carried by players in their mid to late 20s.
Yeah, this is what happened when guys stayed in college for 3 years, right? Like that was one thing that was kind of funny to me going back and watching earlier episodes. It's like when Jordan was at UNC, like he stayed for what, three years?
Three,
yeah. Yep. That would never happen ever today. And so thinking about, you know, how he got the chance to absorb all that basketball knowledge from Dean Smith, he got the opportunity to, you know, make big shots in college. And so was already like used to pressure coming into school, but how that, you know, that came at a cost. And it also was probably why he like wasn't lifting weights until 91, right?
Yeah. What was that? After the 90 series, I think they said he had 15 pounds. Yeah, all that stuff is it's super interesting. Do you have more on this? I was gonna bring up something about the college stuff because that I thought that's really interesting. But I'll let you finish your point if you got more.
Oh no, I was just it makes a lot of sense to preserve your body more if you're an older rookie, and like that might be why you don't spend a full off season like weight training. And so I especially at a time when medical science is not where it is now, where we were still at a place where like Achilles injuries and ACLs were like death sentences for careers. Yep. It makes a lot of sense why, you know, guys spent less time focusing on or more time focusing on like mental and physical recovery as opposed to just like, you know, working out for 12 months.
Yeah, that does make sense. As I was saying, the college stuff, they showed some Rodman college stuff because he went to, I think, was it Southeast Oklahoma State? I feel like some of that old footage, you mentioned the Jordan stuff, we saw some Pippen in college stuff. Some of the Rodman, like the young Rodman footage, was obviously he had a very tough upbringing. I know he was homeless at one point, and he obviously he came out of college late at 25 years old, and he played at a small school. But it was kind of funny watching College Rodman. They showed him getting buckets with like a smooth jumper. So I thought that was kind of fascinating. Seeing like him in college, seeing Pippen. Obviously, we knew more about Jordan, but especially Pippen and Rodman, kind of seeing them coming up with these small schools and kind of seeing their games in college, I thought was, especially Rodman last night, I thought was really cool.
Yeah, Rodman like out jumping four people three times in a row. For this, like, oh, like, clearly you can see why, like, even as a 25-year-old rookie, you'd be interested in this guy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, there was a lot of other Rodman stuff, not just from the Pistons days. There was the Carmen Electra stuff. I mean, there was the stuff with him kind of at the end of his Pistons days when he kind of went off the rails, and there was the whole thing with he almost committed suicide, but he fell asleep in his car, and they kind of touched on that. Obviously, there's the other documentary where they showed more of that. But he went to the Spurs, and then the Bulls took a gamble on him. The Bulls assistant GM, I think his name is Jim Stack, decided to make that push Jerry Krause into making that trade, which was it Will Perdue and somebody else? I think the Bulls got or traded the Spurs. I guess what Lazarus's other maybe favorite or Rodman anecdote that we saw yesterday was obviously the Carmen Electra stuff with Jordan like coming in the hotel was pretty damn hilarious. Do you want to make a point that was in Chicago, not Vegas? The episode kind of implied that Jordan actually went to Vegas to get Rodman away and Carmen Electra hid there. This was actually in Chicago, but still a hilarious anecdote. Anything else about Rodman here that kind of caught your eye from this doc?
One thing I did like was that, you know, everyone acknowledged like, hey, like Rodman can be his own individual, but that doesn't stop him from wanting to be part of the group. Right. Like, you know, him apologizing to Michael, asking for like another cigar when he doesn't smoke, right? Or him like bringing up the Native American ancestry stuff with Phil Jackson. Like Rodman was very clearly like a very emotionally intelligent person. It just, he had his ups and he had his ups and his downs as well.
I want to ask about the modern day Pistons because why not?
I really don't want to. Do we?
So who's the Pistons GM? Is it Ed Stefanski?
Yeah, Ed Stefanski is he's in GM and everything but title.
Okay.
His official title is like special advisor to the owner or something. He's the GM.
So the Pistons are sort of in like a weird middle ground, I feel like, just in terms of their front office right now, because I believe he has an interim tag. Like, is he going to be the long-term GM of the team, or are the Pistons still looking for someone to sort of, you know, lead the team long term?
No, he's the GM. He's the GM. Okay. They are grooming Malik Rose, I think, for the long term to take that position. But you know, yeah, he's the GM, and again, in everything but title.
What did you think of your D Rose experience this year?
It was oddly frustrating, honestly. I was never a big D Rose guy, even when he was big in Chicago. Watching him every day, you do like get a great sense of his athleticism. You get a great sense of how the pace at which he plays the game. You can definitely see like how impactful he was across the league. That was one thing that was really crazy to me, is like how many other players and other announcers and, you know, opposing broadcast crews are like, you know, Derrick Rose, he's still like, you know, the youngest MVP. That's something that still matters. A lot of players like
love him, I feel like
giving love to him, despite everything. And but like on the court, he was a pretty efficient point guard who did not do a great job of involving his big man and actively. At a point in which the Pistons decided like they were going to start rebuilding and play for the future and develop their young guys, he was gaining like more and more minutes because the coaching staff was still like, hey, like let's try and be competitive. And so like those two things kind of being at a loggerhead was kind of frustrating. You know, Derrick Rose is a great player. It sounds like. And then there was the report that like the Pistons wouldn't trade him for anything but like a lottery pick, which is a pretty big overestimation of what I think he'd be currently worth in the market. And so it was just like, it was nice to have him on the team. He'll be back next year. It's good to have him in the arena. It's good to have him to sell tickets. But he's not like the most amazing point guard ever.
So you're more of a Christian Wood guy at this point, because he had a great year, especially at the end of the season for Detroit.
Yeah. Or like even, you know, Rose not looking to involve like Andre Drummond and Christian Wood as much as he possibly could was like a great source of frustration. It's like, hey, like let's see what this Christian Wood dude's got. Like, you don't have to do all that.
He's a free agent, right? Wood, or he's going to be.
Yeah, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. But luckily, nobody's got cap space, and some other stuff's happening, so no one's really going to have any cap space.
So are you?
So are you assuming he will be back?
Yeah, I'm assuming he'll be back. I'm assuming they'll do whatever it takes to retain him.
Yeah, makes sense.
So are you on the LaMelo bandwagon like I am? Because the Pistons could use a point guard too, and are going to be high in this lottery.
I am less so on the LaMelo bandwagon. I actually dropped my big board on Detroit Bad Boys today.
Oh, hell
you can
yeah.
Check that out. Your Chicago audience can check that out if they're interested. I had Killian Hayes at the top of my board just because he has both a high floor and high ceiling outcome. And to me, like, that speaks a lot to where the Pistons like need to go in this draft in particular. This draft has not a lot of high floor guys, and the high floor guys that it does have very low ceilings. And that perfectly describes LaMelo Ball, by the way. And Killian Hayes is not that. Killian Hayes, I think, has a baseline of being like a pretty good starting point guard and a really high ceiling potential outcome of being like a continuous multi-time all-star. And so like that's the guy I've identified as who I would like for the Pistons to take.
Yeah, I've in doing the mock drafts for SB Nation, I've mocked Killian Hayes there, and I'm looking at your big board right now, Devin Vassell at 4, so I already love this big board. You're spot on with this. I can't wait to sit down and actually read this. But yeah, I think that's a good summation of LaMelo's game, and Killian Hayes is a great prospect. It'll be interesting to see if the Pistons or the Bulls can get him, if they're were the Pistons 5 in the lottery?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, and the Bulls are 7, so.
Yeah, what are the Bulls interested in? I know the Bulls have a need on the wing, but the wing prospects on this draft are not exactly, well, unless you count Devin Vassell, are not exactly like to die for. So where do you think the Bulls end up going?
Yeah, I would like LaMelo, but of course they would probably need the first or second pick to him. And then beyond that, it's kind of tough because there are a lot of good guard prospects, but given the way a lot of them play the game, I'm not sure how good of a match they are with Kobe White. Like a Cole Anthony, Kobe White backcourt could lead the league in field goal attempts, but potentially not efficiency. Tyrese Maxey I like a lot, and I think that he is a nice complementary skill set, but him and Kobe together would be a pretty small backcourt. I'm not totally sold on Tyrese Halliburton, but someone was making the case for him to me, and they were starting to convince me a little bit when I was on a podcast over the weekend. So maybe someone like Halliburton would be a good compliment. But yeah, I would say what the Bulls need is the best available player, because their biggest problem is they don't have much talent. Obviously, a wing would be nice, given that they have only Otto Porter basically on the wing, and he's going to be entering the last year of his contract in addition to not really being a reliable player. But I don't think Isaac Okoro from Auburn has really established himself firmly as like a good enough prospect to be taken 7 overall. Maybe he still goes that high, or maybe a team like the Bulls would take him. But more than anything else, I would want the Bulls to go best player available over looking for a specific positional fit.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I was interested that you don't think of Kobe White and Zach LaVine as a long-term pairing, right? Like you mentioned a bunch of guys playing a complementary role next to White, didn't mention LaVine at all.
Right. I like Zach quite a bit. I think Zach LaVine's a really good player. He could potentially be here for the next 4 or 5 years. I think there's no doubt. But with the Bulls having a new front office now led by Arturis Karnišovas, I think that it's likely he's going to want to put his stamp on the team. And, if you break up what is currently the Bulls' young core, how much are you really losing, considering they were, again, a terrible team this year when they were trying to actually be good? They had a lot of injuries, no doubt. But, they're ending the year once again with the seventh overall chances to hit the number one pick in the lottery. So I think he's going to want to put a stamp on the team. And I like LaVine. I think LaVine's a really good player. He's totally miscast in sort of being an offensive initiator and an on-ball creator, when I would like to see him a little bit more used in like an off-ball role where he could run around screens, really leverage his shooting. But of course, you know, the Bulls don't have anyone else to run a pick and roll or run in isolation. So the burden falls to LaVine every time. But yeah, I mean, who knows the way Karnišovas is thinking, but I do think that it's likely he's going to want to put his own stamp on the roster over the next year, year and a half.
Yeah. What, like, you look at the Bulls, like on paper, like theoretically, like their core seems like decent. Like, if you like going into the draft, like, oh, like this is where we need somebody. Like, you have Kobe White at point guard, Zach LaVine at shooting guard, Otto Porter at small forward, then you have Lowry and Wendell Carter. Like, theoretically, that looks nice. But as Ricky was saying, like, there's like overall, just the results just aren't there, and like nobody should be untouchable. So like when you're looking at the draft, like take the best player available. Nobody make any moves you really want, because like what do you have to lose? Like if you trade away Zach LaVine, like would I say they should do it? Not necessarily, but like if you get a good possible trade for Zach LaVine, if Art Karnišovas wants to go in a different direction, like fine, as long as you don't like make a terrible deal. Like you don't have to just go out and start making bad deals. But like if there's something out there, it's like whatever. If you want to trade Lauri Markkanen, whatever. Like, and with the draft, like I'm not really as much of a draft guy as you guys, so I'm not that up on this kind of stuff. But like, yeah, I'm just best player available train. The Bulls need good players. They need good two-way players. They need smart players. Karnišovas has kind of talked about how, like, I mean, just look at the Nuggets. You get good passers, moving the ball, that kind of stuff, just multi-skilled players. That's what they need. So we'll see which direction he goes.
Yeah, I will say Karnišonov, is that how you pronounce
Karnišovas,
it?
Karnišovas, I believe.
your new president of basketball ops. I will say that he strikes me as the kind of guy who wouldn't just like panic trade LaVine, or as my hope would be, just kind of give Wendell Carter Jr. away for free. Because that would be a guy I'd be really interested in if he's available. So I feel like you guys are in good hands.
Let's hope so.
I hope
now
so.
That they just need to make a decision on the coach.
Yeah, yeah. Those will be some new hands.
Yeah. Ricky, did you see that Phil Jackson has been mentoring Jim Boylan, giving him advice? That cracked me up today when I was reading that. It's clearly not working. Maybe you could just give him Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen instead of Phil Jackson's old advice, which obviously Phil Jackson, arguably the GOAT coach, not really helping with his Jim Boylan advice right now. I guess, Ricky, you have anything else?
No, I think that does it for us.
My last question here, just back to kind of the Pistons, obviously with the Bulls and Pistons are both kind of in a similar, like, where the hell are they going situation. Like, what's the deal with Blake Griffin? Like, do you think he's washed? And like, where do the Pistons go from here? Just like in general, like your young core is, what, Luke Kennard, he didn't get traded, right? I feel like I totally forgot about Luke Kennard.
No,
he didn't. Like, okay, that's what I thought. There were rumors from what I remember. And then there's like Sekou Doumbouya. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, but like, just I guess, what's the deal with Blake Griffin? Where do the Pistons go from here? And like, how do we get back to a point where the Bulls and Pistons are relevant again to get together?
That's going
to
take a couple of years for both of us. No, the Pistons are rebuilding, I think officially at this point. Blake is recovering from his knee scope. I think that he hasn't officially like asked for a trade or anything. I think he likes being in Detroit for the most part, but I think that his dislike of being in a situation that's going to be as thorough a rebuild as Detroit's going to require is probably going to force him out. His contract is obviously a big impediment for that. But with that said, you know, he's only got two more years. You know, if you granted like this season, this regular season is over. He's only got two more years on the deal. You know, whenever the trade deadline is next season, you can imagine a team talking themselves into, you know, 18 months of Blake Griffin, much like the Detroit Pistons talked themselves into, you know, 6 months of Blake Griffin. Before Stan Van Gundy was fired. So, yeah, I think that he is eventually traded, but it's not a requirement at this time. He's not killing their cap space, right? They still have $30 million in cap space.
Yeah.
They are a young team, but they don't have any like young stars. So it's not like they're probably going to play him and Christian Wood together. So it's not like he's blocking Christian Wood from playing. Yeah, he's just, and like, he's a good locker room dude, right? Like, he, I know that might be surprising to some people who were, you know, less than considerate of how the way things ended in Los Angeles, especially with like the Lob City Clippers. It's weird to think of, like, if you're a Clippers fan, you're probably like weirded out to think of Blake Griffin as like a locker room like leader, but like that's exactly what he's been for Detroit. And so it'd be, it's not, again, it's not like, it's not pressing that they trade him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Like I said, but we going from the Last Dance talking about like our current teams and just the glory days for both our franchises to now. It's been a long ride. Obviously getting very nostalgic watching this old stuff and watching, remember when the Bulls were actually like really cool? I feel like that's, and like the Pistons too, like the Pistons were a badass team. They were the bad boys, and like the Bulls were a super cool, badass team to watch. Now it's just like both teams are just like wallowing in irrelevance. So like hopefully in the next couple of years, both our squads can get good again and we can build this rivalry back up. It's been a while. Lazarus, I got nothing else. I think we're good here. Thank you so much for joining us here on Cash Considerations. Please tell our listeners where we can find you on Twitter, where you can find all your work again.
No, absolutely. And again, thanks for having me. I am the host of Detroit Bad Boys, the Detroit Bad Boys podcast, and Pistons versus Everybody. You can find both of those wherever you found this podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Laz Chance. That's at LazChance. And also, you know, if you're interested in Detroit Bad Boys or Detroit Pistons news, you just go to DetroitBadBoys.com. That's the best place on the internet for Pistons news and analysis.
Thank you so much again, man. For Ricky and Jason here at Cash Considerations, you know where to find us. We're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, all those places. Shout out to Bet Online. Shout out to Blue Chew. Shout out to Blue Wire Pods. Check out all the other great pods across the network. There's no sports going on right now, but we're putting out great content all the time. So go please check us out and support us. So we will talk to you guys next time. I think our next pod will, maybe we'll try to learn a bit more about Mark Eversley, get a little deeper dive into him. Maybe we'll see if the Bulls actually, we'll see if they make a move on a coaching on Jim Boylan soon. It seems like Karnišovas is probably going to take his time there, but we'll see. So I think our next pod will probably be talking a bit about Mark Eversley. And then obviously we've still got 3 more weeks of the Last Dance coming up. So we will talk more about Last Dance. Looks like next week we'll probably have some Dream Team stuff. So there'll probably be some more stuff about the Isaiah Thomas Dream Team snub. They were talking about some of that today. And then I think there's also be some stuff about the business of Michael Jordan and commercials and all that stuff. So that'll be a lot of fun. So for again, Ricky and Jason, Cash Considerations. We'll talk to you guys next time. Take it easy.